Alright, hello everyone. I guess I do the short straw. So I'm the second oilseed cash cover crop presentation in a row. Great job to Swatab. We actually have similar collaborators, USDA Morris. We collaborate with them as well. But today I'll be talking about the oilseed cash cover crops, pennycress and camelina in a corn and soybean rotation as well. So a little bit different aspect. We're talking about some weed suppression and stuff. But I'll be talking, I'm going to start with a little background for this research. Starting with the annual report from CTIC, NCR, SARE, published this September on cover crops. The dominant species in this report were cereal rye, radish, and crimson clover. Overall adoption, we know it varies by state, but it's low, especially in the Midwest. In Minnesota, 1.5% of growers report using cover crops. The benefits, this is an economic session, so I'll be focusing mostly on the economics, but there are multiple ecological benefits. I can go a little bit into those a little bit. But nitrate reductions, phosphate reductions, pollinator services, soil cover, all those ecological services. But also weed suppression. In this report, 15% of growers, respondents, reported using less herbicides when using cover crops, 44% reported better weed control when using cover crops. They also recorded data from those who do not use cover crops. And one of the big barriers to adoption, which I'll be addressing here today, is that they're concerned about a profit slash lack of return. And if you look at the three dominant species that were listed in this report, you can see that unless you have animals or you have some kind of end credit, you're not going to see that direct economic return to the system. So our solution is pennycress and camelina. These are oilseed cover crops, cash cover crops. They're both from the Brassicaceae family. They're cold-tolerant winter annuals with rapid seed maturity. They have substantial spring biomass production and weed suppression ability. But most importantly, to address the concerns of those who have not adopted cover crops yet, they have economic opportunity. Pennycress and bio-based products and biodiesel, camelina and food-grade oil and biodiesel. And so we're developing the market and profitability in Minnesota. AURI, who's division of the University of Minnesota, is extracting the oil, fiber, and proteins that can be used for industrial testing. And we also have industry partners, General Mills, interested in camelina for oil, fiber, and protein for their products, PepsiCo for pennycress oil for polymers for their plastic products, and JetBlue pennycress for jet fuel. So how does this relay copying system work? See if I can get the pointer here. We're going to start over here. Oops. Okay. I'm going to start over here, number one. So at R5, end of August, we planted the cover crop at 15 pounds an acre into standing corn using this tall boy interseeder is what we call it. It broadcasts and incorporates. It's a modified detassler. And the corn, the full season corn, is harvested over the top of the growing cover crop, which you can see in number two. The cover crop stays in a small rosette stage going into winter. The cover crop then lies dormant underneath the snow. It begins to grow right away after snow melt in early April. The full season soybean is drilled into the cover crop prior to the cover crop flowering. Then in June, the cover crop is harvested over the top of the growing soybean underneath, and the full season soybean grows to maturity. So you can see that in the system you have a continuous living cover, green vegetative cover on the landscape for a longer period of time, and you also have the two marketable seed products in number five and number six in the soybean year. So this is more of a linear representation of the biomass production. You can see that in the fall, after following corn, we have limited biomass production, but still enough to cover the soil and reduce some of that erosion and the nitrate leaching. In the spring is when we really get a lot of biomass production. I'll show you a few pictures later and you'll see that biomass production. But with this biomass production comes another added benefit, and that's that weed suppression ability. There's a lot of biomass in the early spring, and it's very competitive with the weeds. And this couldn't come at a better time. In Minnesota, we're dealing with a number of rising weed-resistant species to herbicides, ragweed, both giant and common, and also water hemp. We've seen in recent years the numbers of resistant species of weeds rise, starting with the atrazine back in the 1970s, then the ALS inhibitors, and today glyphosate, where we have somewhere in the ballpark 30 to 50 species now that are resistant. So what is the cost of resistance for growers? This is, again, this is the economic section, so try to focus on the cost. Increased cost of weed control in 2012 for soybean growers who had resistance weed species was $8 an acre, and it reduced yields and returns by $22 an acre. So again, this increased biomass production allows for us to have some of those ecological services and also have that weed suppression services in the spring. So what are my experimental goals? Determine the yield potential of the relay cropping system and examine the weed suppression ability of the oilseed cover crops. Testable hypotheses, no difference between the oilseed and soybean yield and the monocrop soybean yield, and no difference between the weed biomass in the cover crop and the monocrop soybean treatment. Study locations, we have throughout our corn and soybean production region in Minnesota at Rosemount, Lamberton, and Morris. Experimental design, like I showed you on the graphic, we planted 15 pounds an acre into corn in 2015. We harvested the oilseed in 2016 and then the full season soybean in 2016. And now we're in corn this year and it's still out there. We've had some wet fall here. So this is a randomized complete block design, four replications. There's three different cropping treatments, the camelina plus the soybean, the pennycress plus the soybean, and the monocrop soybean. And again, those camelina and pennycress were relay cropped, as I showed in the graphic. Here are these cropping treatments at the end of May. You can see the just emerging soybeans and the mono soybean treatment, and you can see just how much biomass pennycress and camelina put on. So you can see why there is the potential for some weed suppression ability there. Actually, the soybeans are emerging underneath the camelina and pennycress in this picture. You can see a little bit where the planter went through, but it really recovered well. So the management, broadcast fertilizer application in the spring, 70-30-30 MPK. Two glyphosate applications, late May for the monocrop soybean to keep it weed-free, and then late June for all of the treatments after the oilseed was harvested. Data collection, we are collecting a variety of data from these plots, including pest data, but for this talk, we collected weed biomass and then yield, the oilseed and corn and soybean. The corn and soybean were on the center rows. The plots, I forgot to mention, are 15 feet by 50 feet, so that's six rows approximately of corn and soybean. So let's get into the results. So I designed this is maybe a little complex. But on the left-hand side here on the y-axis, this is yield in kilograms per hectare. You see two different colors. The gold is the oilseed yield in kilograms per hectare, and the maroon is the soybean yield in kilograms per hectare. So we're looking again at the total yield. So the mean separation was taken, LSD was used at 0.05 significance, and you can see the mean separations here. And then on the right-hand side, y-axis, you can see the gross profit. I did this in dollars per acre just because that's what's typically reported in economic literature. And so you can see that the camelina and soybean relay cropping system yielded greater than the monocrop soybean at the Lamberton location. And you can see, again, I didn't do significant differences, but the gross profit is higher. I should have mentioned the prices used was $18 a hundredweight, which is the canola price in Minnesota last year. That's about 18 cents a pound. That's lower than what people are typically getting for camelina. 20 cents is the low end of that. And the soybean, the average of the state last year was $9.23 a bushel. So those are the numbers I use for these gross profits. Rosemount, all these next two charts are going to be the exact same in layout. But you can see that there is no significant difference between the total yield between the cropping treatments. Perhaps some difference in the gross profit, but again, we have an economist working on this, but without the data on the net profit, it's hard to draw conclusions. Morris, the oilseed yields were much higher here. They always tend to be a lot higher in the Morris location. That resulted in some competition with the soybeans, so therefore we had lower soybean yield, But the overall, again, we're looking at the system, the overall system yielded, did not yield significantly different. So it depends on that, what kind of price you're going to be getting for that oil seed. Again, not going to draw any conclusions on the economics, but I just want to show that gross profit potential. So here's the Minnesota soybean acreage average, $480 per acre. This was last year's statistics. You can see that all of our soybean treatments were above that. But you can just see here in a chart form the potential for the gross potential profit of this system at all the locations. So I'm going to switch gears here now to the weed data. I'm going to show biomass and then percent control. We use natural weed populations. So this was whatever came up in these plots. We did not plant weeds. So at the Morris location, we did not have any weeds emerge. It's been very well managed for years, so that we do not have weed data for that location. But at Lamberton, you can see a substantial weed biomass reduction between the three cropping treatments. Pennycress and Camelina greatly reduced the weed biomass production, compared to the monocrop soybean. And I should mention that this was taken before that first glyphosate application, so this is early season weed biomass. Just a different layout here. This is now percent control, so you could, you know, monocrop soybean, zero, split to zero, and then Camelina and Pennycress, you're looking at about 90-some percent control at the Lamberton location. Thank you. This is the Rosemont location, significantly higher natural populations. You can see it's up at 40 grams. But again, that same kind of reduction pattern was seen. And so, again, you see about 90% control of that early season weed biomass with the Camelina and Pennycress systems. And so the conclusions, one of three locations in the oilseed cropping system over-yielded the monocrop soybeans. Pennycress and Camelina cover crops reduced that early season weed biomass. This is our team and our sponsors, our funders, the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, Forever Green Initiative, and of course the University of Minnesota. Very thankful for our team and our collaborators who have helped me with this research. And with that, I'll take questions. Yes. So beginning to be, yes. We have growers that are starting to grow, but I was using data from the Camelina crushing plants out on the West Coast. So there are, where people are growing just the spring Camelina and not the winter annual, that's the numbers.
Well, we've grown both of those in Montana, but usually our Camelina doesn't come off till July.
Right. Yes. We harvest the third week in June, typically. So, yes.
Thank you for the presentation. How does the length of weed control from the two annual crops relate to the weed control period of the weed control period?
Yes, so the question was, how does the weed control and the critical weed-free period affect soybean? And as you saw from that Morris data, if I can go back quickly, whenever we had that high biomass in the cover crops, we affected the soybeans. So again, the total yield, it's going to be a balancing act. Actually, we have a system, I have a supplemental slide here. We're working on this is a skip row system, and so you're not planting in the rows where the soybean will go, so we reduce the competition for the soybeans. This would probably also reduce the bio or the weed suppression ability as well. But yeah, this is, we don't know that data yet. This is a new agronomic solution we're looking at. Thank you. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question about how do you define a cash cover crop? So if you make money out of
it, like, so you deny a cover crop? Right. We define the cash cover crop as if you have a direct marketable seed product or a direct marketable product. So if you had, if you could use a forage, say, you're feeding animals, that could be termed cash cover crop as well.
Your last question.
I was just wondering, on your economic analysis, are you subtracting some profit for input costs?
No, so that was all gross. So there's no subtraction on I think I mentioned that, but it was all gross profit. We have an economist working on that now, so hopefully I'll have those numbers next year on the input cost. So.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.